I was born in the bitter cold, but into warm and loving hands. Aunt Lydia Jessup was the midwife who brought me into the world on January 1, 1968, just 2 hours after midnight. Aunt Lydia could not believe I'd survived. She was the midwife who had delivered babies for 2 generations, including my mother. When she saw the placenta, she realized that my mother had chronic placental abruption. Mom had hemorrhaged throughout her pregnancy and thought she was miscarrying, but when the bleeding stopped, she shrugged it off, assuming she was still pregnant. Aunt Lydia, the midwife, said that by the time I was born, the placenta was almost completely detached from the uterus. My mother could have bled to death, and I could have been born prematurely or, worse, stillborn. But I came into the world as a feisty 7-pound baby, my mother's second daughter. My father said she could name me Carolyn or Annette. She looked up both names and decided to call me Carolyn because it meant wisdom. My mother always said that even as a baby, I looked extremely wise to her. I was born into 6 generations of polygamy on my mother's side and started life in Hilldale, Utah, in a fundamentalist Mormon community known as the FLDS, or the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Polygamy was the issue that defined us and the reason we'd split from the mainstream Mormon church. My childhood memories really began in Salt Lake City. We moved there when I was about 5. Even though my parents believed in polygamy, my father had only one wife. He owned a small real estate business that was doing well and decided it made sense to use Salt Lake as a base. We had a lovely house with a porch swing and a landscaped yard and trees. This was a big change from the tiny house in Colorado City with dirt and weeds in the yard and a father who was rarely home. But the biggest difference in moving to Salt Lake City was that my mother, Narylon, was happy. She loved the city and delighted in having my father home every night after work. My dad was doing well, and Mom had enough money to buy plenty of groceries when we went to the store and even had some extra for toys. There were soon 4 of us. I had 2 sisters, Linda and Annette. I was in the middle. Linda was 18 months older than I, and Annette 2 years younger. My baby brother Arthur arrived a few years after Annette. My mother was thrilled to finally have a son because in our culture, boys have more value than girls. Linda and my mother were very close, but my mother always seemed very irritated by me, in part, I think, because I was my father's favorite. I adored my dad, Arthur Blackmore. He was tall and thin, with large bones and dark, wavy hair. I remember that whenever we were around other families, I thought I had the best-looking father in the entire world. I saw him as my personal protector and felt safe when I was in his presence. His face lit up when I entered the room. I was always the daughter he wanted to introduce when friends visited our house. My mother complained that he didn't discipline me as much as he did my sister Linda, but he ignored her and didn't seem to care. We only lived in Salt Lake City for 1 year, but it was a happy one. Mother took us to the zoo and to the park, where we'd play on the swings and slides. My father's business was successful and expanding, but he decided we needed to move back to Colorado City, Arizona, a tiny nondescript FLDS enclave about 350 miles south of Salt Lake City and a stone's throw from Hilldale, Utah, where I was born. The reason we went back was that he didn't want my sister Linda attending a regular public school. Even though she would technically be going to a public school in Colorado City, most of the teachers there were FLDS and very conservative. In theory, at least, religion is not to be taught in public schools, but in fact, it was an integral part of the curriculum there. When we returned to Colorado City, my father put an addition onto our house. There was more space to live in, but life became more claustrophobic. Mother changed. When we got up in the morning, she would still be sleeping. My father was on the road a lot now, so she was home alone. When we tried to wake her up, she'd tell us to go back to bed. She'd finally surface mid-morning and come into the kitchen to make us breakfast and talk about how much she wanted to die. While she made us hot cornmeal cereal, toast, or pancakes, She'd complain about having nothing to live for and how she'd rather be dead. Those were the good mornings. The really awful mornings were the ones when she'd talk about how she was going to kill herself that day. I remember how terrified I felt, wondering what would happen to us if my mother killed herself. Who would take care of us? Father was gone nearly all the time. One morning I asked my mother, "Mama, if a mother dies, what will happen to her children? Who will take care of them?" I don't think Mother noticed my urgency. She had no idea of the impact her words had been having on me. I think she felt my question arose from a general curiosity about dying. Mother was very matter-of-fact in responding to me. "Oh, the children will be all right. The priesthood will give their father a new wife. The new wife will take care of them." By this time, I was about 6. I looked at her and said, "Mama, I think that Dad better hurry up and get a new wife." I was beginning to notice other things about the world around me. One was that some of the women we'd see in the community when we went shopping were wearing dark sunglasses. I was surprised when a woman took her glasses off in the grocery store and I could see that both her eyes were blackened. I asked my mother what was wrong, but the question seemed to make her uncomfortable and she didn't answer me. My curiosity was piqued, however, and every time I saw a woman in dark glasses, I stared at her to see if they were covering strange mottled bruises.